Our LA County court system is suffering. There have been several flooding events at 5 local courthouses, sometimes causing closures and the postponement of court cases. Couple that with the seismic vulnerabilities of downtown LA's 2 main courthouses, and the risk cannot be ignored. The courts need extensive work to make them safe for the public and allow the criminal justice system to be swift and efficient. Another crippling blow to that justice system is the lack of court reporters, which is being called a constitutional crisis. The pool of stenographers is rapidly being depleted and not being refilled. We talk about options to fix this broken system. And as we celebrate Women's History this month, we meet a woman who is making history by breaking world records, and we talk to her about what she's learned and can share about her experiences. Fox 11 News In Depth starts right now. Hello, everyone. I'm Hal Eisner, and this is Fox 11 News In Depth. Martin Luther King Jr. was once famously quoted as saying, "Justice too long delayed is justice denied." And here in L.A., we're at risk of delaying justice simply because of the age of our courthouses. We've had a few high-profile incidents involving flooding, especially at the Compton Courthouse, which have caused closures and delays. And according to our guest today, that's not even the worst part of it. Let's bring in L.A. County Presiding Judge Samantha Jessner, Assistant Presiding Judge Sergio Tapia, and Executive Officer David Slayton. Thanks, all of you, for joining us. And, you know, we spoke to not too long ago about this very issue, and it had to do with flooding at the Compton Courthouse and the serious problems that that created. And it was, in fact, the second time this had happened in the month of January. So what's going on? Let's start with Judge Jessner and see if you can explain to us exactly why this is happening.
Well, the short answer is it's happening because most of our buildings are very old. We have 36 courthouses that are open, and 19 of those 36 are more than 50 years old.
And why hasn't this been addressed at this point? Let's move around the table.
Well, I think part of it has to do with money, obviously. We're talking about facilities that cost millions, hundreds of millions of dollars, even up to $1 billion. And also, I think it's courage on the part of the legislature and those in power to actually take action.
And David, let me ask you, who's in charge?
At the end of the day, the buildings are owned by the Judicial Council of California, so it's a state funding issue requiring the legislature to appropriate money, the Department of Finance and governor to provide funding for it. At the end of the day, it's the Judicial Council's buildings.
David, how widespread is all of this?
You know, there are places all across the state that are having issues with their facilities, but I think for us in L.A., as the largest court system in the state and also in the country, you know, we have 36 buildings where we conduct court every day. And so it's a real problem because most of our facilities are in that end-of-life cycle.
Hey, Judge Tapia, you know, we talk about how many buildings there are, but we haven't addressed how many people are inside those buildings that are getting services, who are working, all of them affected by these sort of things. Can you address that a little bit?
Well, if you just take our two largest courthouses, which are in downtown L.A., the criminal, the Fultz Justice Center and the Moss Courthouse, we're talking about 6,500 people a day go into these buildings.
And then, Judge Jessner, there's seismic issues.
Boy,
right?
Are there.
Right. So, and talk about that, because we think that we are seismically prepared, don't we, in our buildings because of years and years and years of knowing we have earthquakes in this part of the world. So why are there buildings that are seismically not up to snuff?
Well, to give you an example of the boy, are there seismic issues, the Mosque Courthouse, which is our largest courthouse, is actually two courthouses that are built together and secured by a metal rod. They are the fourth and fifth most seismically vulnerable courthouses in the state. And the Fultz Courthouse, which is not far behind, is equally as vulnerable in terms of seismic possibility and destruction, really.
You know, I don't think the goal here is to scare anybody who has to go to court. But if we had an earthquake, David, if we had an earthquake and we talk about the vulnerabilities of say, those two downtown courthouses, what's your worst case scenario?
We've been through this before. We had a courthouse which was destroyed by the Long Beach earthquake, and downtown L.A. was without a civil family courthouse for 25 years. And obviously, our concern would be there's 100 courtrooms in our mosque, our largest courthouse in the mosque building, thousands of people coming in every day to get justice. And if an earthquake were to red tag one of our courthouses, obviously we would have a very difficult job in being able to find a place for those cases to occur.
And Judge Tapia, we've talked about this before, but let's fill everybody in on this. When you have to close a building like the Compton Courthouse because of a flood, leakage of pipes, elevators stop, whatever it is, people are coming to court to have hearings, to be involved. What do you do in those cases?
Well, we have to triage the situation. We have to work with our colleagues and staff to reroute cases.
Means having people stand outside.
Not just stand outside, but having to travel to different courthouses, which, as we have tried to push for now several months, even years, we need to expand remote technology so that we go to the public to provide service rather than having them come to us. And that is one way that we can try to remedy this. And we do a fabulous job on the staff side of triaging, but it's not sustainable.
But you know, it's interesting in this day of age that we can't send a text message, that we can't send an email and say we've had to move your court appearance to another building. But when I spoke about people being outside, your staffers are outside. They're dealing with the public that's coming in and saying, you know, you have to go 15 miles over this way to a different courthouse, right?
We're even conducting proceedings outside. We have judges in hallways, in lobbies, and outside actually hearing cases in this situation, besides directing people to different courthouses.
What if this is not resolved? What if you want new buildings, right? You want better structures. You want better seismic construction. But what if this stuff doesn't get done?
We continue to do what Judge Tapia just says, which is triage, which is far from ideal in terms of providing meaningful access to justice.
And let me let you be the one to say in 30 seconds what you'd like to see done.
I'd like to see the legislature prioritize providing the court with the buildings and structures it needs in order to continue to operate in a way that is consistent with our mission.
David, a bond measure maybe for the state to raise money to build buildings?
The legislature uses different ways of funding buildings. There's different ways of doing this. And so at the end of the day, you know, there may be different solutions to the different problems. Maybe one of our smaller courthouses, they can fund maybe from general revenue. Maybe another one needs a bond. Maybe there's another way of doing it. At the end of the day, you know, the court is really at the whim of what the legislature does. And so we need their help.
But what I hear is something has to be done. Don't go away, Presiding Judge Samantha Jessner, Assistant Presiding Judge Sergio Tapia, and Executive Officer David Slayton. There is another subject we want to talk to you guys about. It's about a very vital courtroom position that seems to be very difficult to fill. We're facing a critical shortage of court reporters. Why that's a problem? Coming up right after the break. Don't go away. We're back now on Fox 11 News in Depth with L.A. County Presiding Judge Samantha Jessner, Assistant Presiding Judge Sergio Tapia, and Executive Officer David Slayton. And David, this is for you. Tell us about the shortage of court reporters. This didn't happen overnight, and it is problematic, right?
Yeah, it's a really big issue because obviously when there are court proceedings happening, someone needs to take down the record, what's actually being said in court, a verbatim transcript of what's happening in the court so that people can use it. And unfortunately, we're in a position where we don't have enough. We have over 100 vacancies that have developed over time, but it's certainly impacting our ability to be able to capture that record.
And to be clear, a court reporter, not like a news reporter, but a court reporter is documenting this, and that documentation is part of access. And that's an important part of fair trials, right?
Absolutely.
And so when we talk about fairness and we need to do something about this, I don't know what you do to get more people in these jobs, but I think I understand that you had, there was $10 million or something last year that was dedicated to this?
For Los Angeles, it was about $9 million that the legislature provided for recruitment and retention efforts, and we undertook vigorous and generous recruitment and retention, only to end up with minus 7 court reporters.
Wait a minute. All this money, and you ended up with, instead of more, with less. How'd that happen?
Well, despite the fact that, as I said, there was a very generous benefits package and signing bonus, et cetera. More people left the court and retired from that position than we were able to hire.
So when you have this attrition thing, there's nobody in line waiting to come in and take the job?
There are very few court reporters in line and willing to take that job.
Well, what do you attribute this to? Why do you think that's happening?
I think there are two things you can look at. First, we're talking about an aging court reporter population. The average age across California for a court reporter is 55. So they're at the tail end of their career. That's one factor. The second factor is the incentives in the private sector, where they are going to get paid a lot more than government can pay them. And that's a challenge.
David, I hate to use these words, but are we talking about a constitutional crisis?
Yeah, we definitely think it's a constitutional crisis. And it has reached that point across the state, but even here in L.A., where, you know, if you're a litigant coming into one of our family law courtrooms, and let's say you have a child custody case that's being heard, and you don't agree with the ruling that was made, well, we all know if you don't agree with the ruling, then you can appeal the case, right? But if there's not a record of what actually happened in court, then the California Supreme Court has said that's a fatal flaw that will basically damage your ability to appeal. So it's really a constitutional crisis because people have lost rights that they would otherwise have.
We're in a technological age, right? And we have AI, and we have tape recorders, and we have all kinds of transcribing things on our phones. Why isn't there a technological approach to dealing with court reporting? Or is it that you have to have a human being actually documenting the information for the purposes of accuracy?
So, Hal, it's both. So the legislature allows courts to electronically record certain types of cases, including misdemeanors, as well as limited civil cases where the amount of controversy is less than $25,000, and infractions. And then in all of the other case types that we do, we are not allowed by law to use electronic recording to capture the verbatim record of those proceedings.
And the logic behind that?
Well, it's unclear, because someone with a misdemeanor matter would say that my matter is just as important and significant as someone facing a divorce or a child custody dispute. So it doesn't really make too much sense that you would say that it works in some areas and not others, when the fact is that technology is such today that you get a very accurate record.
Do you think we ought to be using technology? We ought to be using these sort of devices and things that we have and not rely so much on the fact that we prefer humans, but if we can't get humans, there's got to be an alternative?
I think you described it accurately. We prefer humans. Court reporters are part of our court family, and we want them here. We want them to stay. We want to recruit new court reporters. However, the technology exists where we can provide better access for every single litigant that comes into our courtrooms so that they have a verbatim record. Last year alone, we had 332,000 proceedings with no record whatsoever.
David, I'm going to ask you two questions and ask you to try to get it all in about 45 seconds.
Sure.
Why is it that, well, let's put it this way. How can people get these jobs? Where can they be trained? What do they pay? And what do you want to tell people out there that would help fill your vacancies?
Sure. First of all, there's 100 vacancies. So if you're a court reporter, come apply with us. We have really great incentives. If you're not a court reporter, there are schools out there that are providing the training that you would need to do that. It's a hard program, but you can do it. And we're happy for them to contact us at the court to learn more about those schools, what the jobs are available. The jobs pay right now, the starting pay is about $125,000 plus benefits, and they get transcript fees on top of it. It's a very good job. They're a very important part of our family, and we would love for them to get trained and come join our family.
David Slayton, Sergio Tapia, Samantha Jessner, thank you all very much for being with us. And coming up next on Fox 11 News In Depth, we have an inspirational story. If you ever feel like you're not doing enough with your life, if you think you're stuck in a rut, you'll want to meet our next guest. She turned a potentially deadly situation into a new lease on life, and now she's written a book. We'll be right back. Don't go away. Thank you. Welcome back to Fox 11 News In Depth. I'm Hal Eisner, and in March, we take a moment to honor women's history. But today, we're honoring the history that is still being made. Our guest in this segment has made history by summiting what are called the 7 Second Summits. Now, those are the second highest peaks on each continent, which are also steeper, less traveled, and more remote than the highest summits. Jen Drummond, welcome. Good to see you here. You're a mom. You're a mountaineer. You're the author of a book. It's called Breakproof, right?
Breakproof.
And you know, there's a story behind that title because Jen is, I think from all accounts, breakproof. Tell us what you did. Tell us why you did it. But it all started with a terrible accident that could have killed you.
It did. So in 2018, I was in a horrible car crash that should have taken my life and didn't. Thankfully, I'm still here. And when that happens to you, you start questioning yourself. What am I doing to leave a legacy, to have impact, and make this life bigger than my own?
You know, when bad things happen, there's an old phrase, climb back up on the mountain and try it again. And that's what you did.
I did.
But you took a real mountain.
I did. You know what? Some of us have different mountains, metaphorical. Mine happened to be physical, but it works.
And so you have seven kids.
I do.
You climbed seven of these summits. You've got 7 points in your... What's with the number seven?
It's a lucky number, right?
I guess so.
7 continents, 7 mountains, 7 children. It was a jackpot. How could I not pursue
777, right? Tell us about your kids.
Yes, they're fantastic. They're my why. My oldest now is 17. My youngest are twin daughters that are 11. So I have 5 boys first and then 2 girls.
I have twins. And I know how that changes your life, too.
That changes. I thought it didn't matter. It matters.
And so these second summits, mm-hmm. or some, how do you say it again?
Yeah, seven summits.
Yeah. Tell us about that. Yeah. These are the second highest peaks in the various continents that you went to?
Yes. And unbeknownst to many, they're actually harder for the most part than the first.
Why?
Steepness and then just technicality. So, for example, if you take the country Africa, Kilimanjaro is the highest point. I actually just took 3 of my sons climbing there last month. And Mount Kenya is the second highest point. Kilimanjaro, you hike. Mount Kenya, you actually have rock climbing shoes on and a harness, and you're climbing up a wall.
I'm looking at the images that are on the screen right now. I that feels steep.
Yeah, it is. It is.
And that's you right there.
That's me. Yeah.
What's that like? You're on the mountain. You're kind of working your way up the mountain. It's cold. It's maybe windy.
It's cold. It's windy. But you're in nature. I think you're just in awe of how big and vast our world is. And if we really allow it to be a playground, it becomes that for ourselves. And so getting out in nature allows you to disconnect from this busy, noisy world and connect to yourself and be clear on your purpose.
We talked or alluded to the car crash that started this whole journey for you. But tell us how that car crash, and it was between, what, a truck and your Porsche Cayenne? Is that what it
yes,
was?
Yes.
And how did that change your life?
Yeah, so I hit the second trailer of a semi-truck, went end over end and then rolled sideways, and I was alive. So I'm like, okay, now I want to live this life. What happens if it's my last decade or year or month or week or day?
Or minute.
So what do I want to do with these minutes? And how can I leave an impact to inspire others that we don't have time forever? So while you're here, live.
That's a lonely place, though, to have that conversation in your head. How did you sort of, you know, have that sort of conversation to lead to an end result?
You know, I started collecting ideas, the bucket list. What are things I want to do, experience, explore? On that list was climb a mountain. In 2020, I was turning 40. So I decided I was going to climb a mountain for my 40th birthday and launch that next decade.
But why a mountain climb? Why not something else?
You know, sometimes I ask that question of myself when I was on the mountain.
Why I mean, you could have gone beaches? Surfing. You could have done any number of things. Why mountains?
I lived in Park City, and so being in the mountains just inspired me. And it's fun to feel small and insignificant in these big environments. Uh-huh. And it's fun to set your goal on something that you can see the top and watch the journey unfold. When you get to that summit, it's a feeling it's really hard to describe, but you chase it.
I have to ask you, though, why the 7 second peaks, you know, as opposed to the peaks?
Yeah, so the first 7 had already been done by maybe 500 people.
You wanted something else.
I wanted something that wasn't as well-traveled, as well-known. I wanted that exploration piece.
And so you lay all that out in this book of yours. And, you know, what is it that, you know, sort of give us the glimpse of sort of what's in these pages here?
Yeah, so I take the reader on the journey to each one of the climbs. and highlight a lesson that I learned in that pursuit that applies to all of our goals, whatever our mountain is.
That's that metaphorical thing.
It is. You know, like one of the big lessons is big mountains take big teams. I think a lot of times we set these huge goals for ourselves and then think we have to do it all by ourselves.
Yeah, but philosophically, I mean, sometimes don't we think that what is ahead of us is daunting and the mountain is too big for us to try to get to?
Yeah, but it's in that journey of pursuit that we're living our lives.
But you have to be able to overcome that sense of intimidation.
You do. I mean, if you don't overcome it, it's going to keep crouching in on you and your life's going to get smaller and less significant. And I think we're here to do big things.
We have a minute. Take half of that to tell us your most challenging moments and take the other half to tell us if you had any second thoughts about what you did.
Oh, I had second thoughts every single time I was on the mountain. I think if you don't have second thoughts, you're not pushing yourself hard enough. On K2, it took me 2 attempts. The first attempt, I ended up losing a teammate to an avalanche. And so having to deal with that setback and metabolize that loss was something I didn't go into this expedition expecting.
Incredible challenge.
Incredibly hard, even more so because I had to go back. I chose to come down and take care of my team instead of continue to climb that year. So when you came back that second time, you have that memory. But luckily, the second year, we had success. And I think that's just that point. Sometimes you need to climb down to climb up to get to the top.
And your next big mountain?
I'm going to Switzerland shortly, and I'm going to climb Mount Rosa over there.
I love Switzerland.
I do, too.
Yeah, it's a great place. Yes. Jen Drummond, thank you so much for joining us. What a story. We'll be back with more Fox 11 News in depth right after this break. Don't go away. Thanks.
Thank you, my friend. I really appreciate it.
Stay where you are for a moment. And finally, if you want to hear an audio version of this program, check out my podcast. You know what it's called, What the Hell? And it's available wherever you subscribe to podcasts or just go to whatthehellpodcast.com. That's it for this week's Fox 11 News In Depth. Thanks so much for joining us. Have a great week, everybody, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.